Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, April 10, 2017. Eyewitnesses say gunmen dressed in South Sudan military uniform are killing civilians in Wau based on their ethnicities.
The areas of Nazareth, Haibafara, and those areas that are inhabited by the Luo and Fatit in Wau. People are just pulled out of their room when they are recognized as Fatit, they are killed. When they are recognized as Luo, they are killed. So in area where I am, around 4 people were killed on the spot.
And SPLM senior official says government soldiers are responsible for killing civilians in Wau.
In the evening yesterday, they came back, starting shooting in Wau town, the area of Bosti, Nazareth, Awilgebi. So as I'm talking to you, Since this morning, 17 people are in the dormitory in the hospital, Wau hospital. There are 17 men and a female.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eyewitnesses say gunmen dressed in military uniform went on a massacre in Wau town. They say dozens of people were killed and scores of others wounded today. The witnesses say the gunmen, who look like government forces, stormed houses, killed civilians and looted property. Michael Atid reports for VOA from Juba.
Odongi Simon, a resident of Wau's Nazareth neighborhood, says he did not understand why he was hearing the sound of random gunshots as he woke up this morning.
It started with the sound of gunshot round the areas of Nazareth, Haibafara, and those areas that are inhabited by the Luo and Fatit in Wau. We have seen that many people are just pulled out of their room when they are recognized as Fatit, they are killed. When they are recognized as Luo, they are killed. So in area where I am, around 4 people were killed on the spot.
Simon says a combination of armed men in military uniform and others in civilian clothes conducted house-to-house searches early this morning, killed dozens of unarmed civilians, then burned down their houses and looted property. He says the violence has paralyzed markets, schools and government institutions.
The general situation is very tense. As we talk now, no one is coming out of the room. All those who know themselves that they are targeted, they cannot go on. They cannot come out of their home to go to the street, because when they go, otherwise they are arrested or they are killed on the spot, like what happened to the rest of the people.
Father Moses Peter, a Catholic priest at the Wau Diocese, says thousands of civilians, mostly women and children, are seeking shelter at the church compound. He says the number of displaced seeking shelter will likely increase if no aid agencies arrive on the scene.
So people who have arrived, they have just come. Most of them are women and children. But currently we don't have something in our hands to give them. The immediate needs should be food for children who are just coming from home. And the second one could be maybe shelter, because most of there are many now and most of them do not have shelter. And it has rained yesterday, and it can rain today or at any time.
An international committee for the Red Cross surgical team says it is flying to Wau today to assist those wounded in the attack. The team's arrival is part of the ICRC planned project to support the Wau Teaching Hospital in its surgical capacity. The ICRC says it received multiple requests to assist medical staff in Wau with patients wounded in the violence. A 23-year-old woman who prefers to be identified only as Nonoya for security reasons is among those sheltering at the Catholic Church compound. Speaking in Arabic by phone from Wau, Nonoya says she saw bodies of a young man killed in cold blood as she fled to the church compound. Nonoya says one of them was shot in the arm and on the chest, and when we arrived, he was still alive. She says a short time later, he died. Another man was killed in Musalas, Nonoya says. He was shot in the stomach and laid on the ground with his motorbike just beside him. A medical worker at Wau Teaching Hospital is speaking on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisal from the government soldiers, says 12 bodies bearing bullet wounds were brought to the mortuary at Wau Teaching Hospital today. Other eyewitnesses, speaking on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals, say dead bodies are still lying on the street in residential areas. Despite the eyewitness accounts, Wau State Deputy Governor Anthony Charles Ngberende says only 6 people were killed and 4 others wounded in the violence. Ngberende has declared a curfew within Wau Town from 9 tonight until 6 a.m. He says his security officers are looking for the men in military uniform and others who carried out the massacre.
We don't know them, actually. They are from where? But some of them, they are civilians. They are in civilian dress, and some of them, they are in uniform. Sometimes the uniform chap is the army, and another one is the police, like this.
SPLA Deputy Spokesperson Santo Domich in Juba confirms that the government forces fought with opposition forces in the Bagari area, about 25 kilometers southwest of Wau Town, on Saturday and Sunday. Domich says government forces captured Bagari, which has been under the control of the armed opposition forces for several months. He says the situation in Wau, in his words, now getting gradually to normalcy. He says he has yet to receive detailed information about today's violence from field commanders in Wau.
I'm still in the office trying to wait the details of the fighting in those areas and then the details of the resistance of retaliation and those who are retaliating among the civil population in Wau.
It is unclear who, if anyone, ordered government soldiers to attack the town of Wau. Valeria Gamboni, deputy head of the ACRC delegation in South Sudan, said, "We call on all weapon bearers to respect civilians, health facilities, and ACRC and other medical staff during this tense time." For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, loyal to Riek Machar, says it was government forces who shot and killed 18 civilians in Wau Town. Tingo Peter confirms that South Sudan Army soldiers have been combing residential areas in Wau, targeting individuals from certain ethnic groups. Peter says government soldiers and its proxy militia attacked rebel positions around Wau Town today.
The government soldiers and the Masenganyor, they plan to attack the area of Bagari with a heavy force of the government, 410, 10 cars, Land Cruiser with a heavy machine, and then a helicopter from up. So they shoot the area since Friday, and our force managed to evacuate from the area of Bagari. In the evening yesterday, they came back, starting shooting in Wau Town, area of Kosti, Nagrate, Awil Jabid. So as I'm talking to you, since this morning, 17 people are in the dormitory in the hospital, Wau Hospital. There are 17 men and a female.
You're telling me 17 people were killed during the shootings in the areas you were mentioning to me?
17, they are men, and one is a lady, which is 18 then.
The fighting started between your soldiers and the government forces. Now, where are your soldiers?
We are outside. We are in Bagari areas. This is where is under our forces. But the plan started from Wau. They gathering in that Maidan called Maidan Tahrir. And then in the morning of Friday, they went to Bagari from two sides. And our forces get out of the area. It's a strategic plan.
And so these 18 people who were killed in Wau, who are they? Are they your troops? Are they your supporters?
No, they are civilians. I'm telling you about the civilians within Wau Town. How can our troops can be in Wau Town? These are the civilians, I'm telling you. And if you want the name, I can send you the name.
This is happening at a time when you and the government signed a peace agreement in Addis Ababa in 2015. Why are you fighting again?
Who is fighting now? Who is starting the fight? We are in place, and as I said, I talked to you that the government make a plan before Friday. They're gathering in Wau, and then they went toward our places and shooting us. And we managed, our forces managed to get out of the area. Also in Mapel area, they shoot our force there and they shoot the civilian. Who started the war? You know the incident, or you know about the incident of Juba. Who started attacking? Who started attacking in Juba? I think all this information you know about it.
It sounds like we are back to a situation where we are witnessing the SPLM-IO and government troops battling each other once again.
I think the whole world are now watching that since the incident of July in Juba, that the government is starting. Right that time, the government did not stop attacking. Have you heard that one day we have attacked the government force in their places?
That's Tingo Peter, Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, loyal to Riek Machar. He was speaking to me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, earlier today. Uganda and the UN Refugee Agency are calling for more international funding for relief services for South Sudanese refugees. It's estimated that $267 million is needed for humanitarian operations. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
With an average of over 2,800 South Sudanese arriving in Uganda daily, the country is considered a major host of Africa's biggest refugee crisis. However, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, alone cannot handle the surge. Its spokesperson in Geneva, Baba Baloch, says Uganda is overwhelmed.
South Sudanese refugees are arriving in Uganda at an alarming rate. They're trying to seek shelter in Uganda. And all the facilities in Uganda are under strain. Uganda needs the world's attention to help these desperate refugees. We need countries, donors, to step forward immediately to support those in Uganda who are hosting refugees and the refugees themselves.
Bariamwesiga Robert is a refugee settlement officer in Uganda's Office of the Prime Minister. He says, as a host to the South Sudanese, Uganda follows the Comprehensive Refugee Response Framework. That means providing them with food, healthcare, and other infrastructure. But underfunding is compromising its ability to deliver some of the services.
Each refugee is entitled to 2,100 kilocalories per day, and that's what we give to these refugees. So we need resources to support these people that we've saved. We need them to engage in livelihood activities. We need children to go to school. We need women to get where to deliver from. We need infrastructure. We need very many things. And the international community has its part to play.
According to UNHCR Communications Officer Roko Nuri, the lack of international support puts in jeopardy Uganda's ability to serve as host.
Local service delivery facility are under a lot of pressure. The numbers are growing and more support, as you know, financial support, political support is needed to invest in long-term solutions which help both refugees and host community. Uganda is truly a role model of progressive refugee policy, and has taken a lot of steps, you know, to improve the environment to where, you know, refugees are settling these days. So Uganda must be helped, because Uganda is upholding to this international obligation towards refugees.
As part of its approach, Uganda gives the refugees plots of land for settlement and integrates them within host communities. It also includes them in national development plans. However, land and other forms of support may not be available without international support, says Uganda's Minister for Refugees and Disaster Preparedness, Engineer Hilary Onek.
The refugees who came earlier could have been given 1, 2, or 3 acres of land to occupy as a family, but today it has been reduced to nearly half an acre or less. As the number increases, we reduce the space because we have no option except giving them the size that we can afford. So we still struggle. That's why we are calling for support from other international agencies, including other countries.
The government and the UNHCR have a shortfall of more than a quarter of a billion US dollars needed to support the refugees. Humanitarian officials originally said they had expected up to 300,000 people to cross the border into Uganda. But as the situation in South Sudan grows more volatile, 100,000 more have been added to that number. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan's education minister says the ministry has no money for students studying abroad. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what images come to mind when you think of home?
Serenity. A serene environment where you see as your last resort, wherever you are in the world, when you go out in the struggle, or in the sun, the everything, that's your final resting place. When you come, you feel at ease.
Sometimes when I imagine home, what comes to mind is just sitting us together, chatting, and we being happy together.
When I think about my home, I feel happy because I miss all those people who are there at home. So when I think of it, I feel released there and I feel happy all the time. Because there is a saying which says that from east to west, home is the best.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's higher education minister says there are no more education funds for students studying abroad in the physical year 2016-2017 budget. Lam says due to the lack of funds, the government will no longer pay for hundreds of South Sudanese students studying on government scholarships in universities of Zimbabwe and other countries. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Last week, 29 South Sudanese students on government scholarships at Zimbabwe's Harare Institute of Technology were kicked out of school because the Kiir administration failed to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars owed in tuition, room and board fees for three semesters. Higher Education Minister Ian Oralam confirms the government has failed to pay fees totaling to $1.5 million of 177 South Sudanese students studying in four Zimbabwean universities for the past 1.5 years.
Unfortunately, we have already exhausted our budget since December. So now we have presented a supplementary budget to the Minister of Finance, and this is what they are still working on.
Lam says the ministry's budget problems worsened with the country's economic crisis. Some South Sudanese students in Harare told South Sudan in Focus last week they are seeking shelter at South Sudan's embassy after being kicked out of school. They described living in cramped spaces with little food in a building with no kitchen and one shower. According to 2014 agreement signed between the two governments, South Sudan is responsible for paying tuition, room and board, and health insurance for students in Zimbabwe. The government allocated 22 million South Sudanese pounds for students studying abroad, but by December last year, 18 million South Sudanese pounds was spent paying students' fees, and another 4 million South Sudanese pounds was spent on operating costs within the ministry, exhausting the entire budget. Lam says education officials are waiting for the finance ministry to fund a supplementary budget for the rest of the fiscal year.
The scholarship is not on the Zimbabwe government. It is on the government of South Sudan. But we are still waiting for the hard currency to be available in central bank, given the fact that the current economic crisis we are in. This is what constrained the process, and we are hoping that things may come out soon.
Last week, the undersecretary in the Higher Education Ministry, Professor Boldeng, told the local iRadio that the parents of students studying abroad should raise money for their children's plane tickets back to Juba. Lam is asking the students sent out of Zimbabwe's Harare Institute of Technology to be patient.
Patience is golden, so they have to be patient. We are not abandoning them. Only that the whole country is under the crisis, economic crisis. That's what delayed their payment. Otherwise, they are all aware that we are working hard at the ministry. We are pushing this to happen in August.
South Sudan's 2016 to 2017 budget is 22.3 billion South Sudanese pounds, 60% of which was allocated to the security sector. Only 1 billion pounds, or 4% of the entire budget, is spent on education. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Providing sanitary pads to schoolgirls is a controversial subject in Uganda. Amid the political scuffles, girls at one school outside the capital, Kampala, decided to make their own. Halima Athumani has the story for VOA from Kampala.
During the 2016 election campaign, President Yoweri Museveni pledged to buy sanitary towels for girls in need. The government estimates that 30% of Ugandan girls from poor families miss school because of lack of sanitary towels. But in February this year, the First Lady, who is also the Minister for Education, told Parliament the government didn't have enough funding for the president's initiative. It would require $4.4 million. This angered university researcher Stella Nyanzi. She took to Facebook, creating pads for Girls Uganda to collect donations. And she soon found herself in a police interrogation room accused of insulting the First Lady online.
The interrogation was about 4 hours. By the time I was out, my sister, who had my mobile phone number, said, "By the way, you're almost getting to your 1 million pads." The following day was Women's Day. And surprisingly, we got our 1 million sanitary pads within 2 days.
Nyanzi continues to push the government to make sanitary pads for girls a priority. Public debate is ongoing about the subject, and the government recently announced that sanitary pads are now to be sold free of value-added tax. Girls at the Parents Care Infant Academy in the slum area of Makindye have taken matters into their own hands. At the back of the class, there are 4 sewing machines that students use to make reusable sanitary towels. Large pieces of pink cloth are laid on the table as some of the girls carefully measure, cut, place a fair size of cotton in between, and stitch with pins. Ready to be sewn, it is then passed on to the tailors, who include 14-year-old Nantume Catherine.
Oh, this hole, it is used to put their cotton. For that cotton to hold the blood to do not come out, you remove it, you throw, and you wash it.
Sarah Sanyo is the headmistress of the school.
It was very, very difficult for these girls to stay in public without having these pads. So when we got this idea of making the sanitary pads, we bought the materials for ourselves, then we got someone to come and teach us.
The school also held a special class to teach the girls about menstruation.
After counting those 28 days, in that week where you have those 28 days, you move with your sanitary pads.
Some question the cleanliness of reusable pads, but health officials assure VOA they are safe if properly washed with soap and water, though access to clean water is not a guarantee in some parts of Uganda. So important are sanitary pads to keeping girls in school that the UN Population Fund, UNFPA, has distributed 50,000 disposable pads in 14 districts of Uganda since November 2015. Dr. Edson Herbert Muhezi is the assistant representative, UNFPA Uganda.
It has been very difficult to keep girls in school, especially in Karamoja, where they have to use leaves. There are no rugs to use. Some of them even sit in the sun, hoping to dry. They are kept there, isolated, and staying 4 days and nights in the bush. It's really dehumanizing.
Professor Nyanzi says that is unacceptable. She visits schools to pass out the pads donated to her Facebook group.
I have a pad. I put it here.
Urging the girls not to let their circumstances hold them down. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
From Kampala, we move to Bangui in the Central African Republic, where armed groups have occupied, looted and damaged schools, preventing thousands of children from getting their education, according to a report released by Human Rights Watch. Zach Badov reports from Bangui. The country has been in crisis since 2012, and militias control much of the countryside.
Several thousand children in the Central African Republic cannot go to school because armed groups continue to use their schools, typically the most solid structures in town, as bases or barracks. Aboubakary Tall is the interim representative for UNICEF in the CAR.
That means basically a whole country that runs at a suboptimal level. When children cannot go to school, they end up in the street and they become vulnerable to all kinds of things, including being recruited into and pressed into service by the armed groups. What it means is we're basically building the kind of citizen that we would not want to run into in a dark corner of the street somewhere.
CAR government forces maintain little control outside the capital. In the countryside, Christian and Muslim armed militias fight between themselves for mineral resources and trade routes. Bandits and other forces like the Lord's Resistance Army also take advantage of the poor security situation. Human Rights Watch researcher Louis Mudge traveled throughout the CAR in November 2016 and January 2017, investigating access to schools. Mudge found even if the fighters were just outside the school, the students still could not or would not attend. Some children would have to pass by militia members who killed members of their family.
We found just scores of children who spoke about how this had reduced their feeling of self-worth, how they felt like they had no future, how they used to have big dreams and how they don't anymore.
The St. Francois Public Primary School in Bangui was occupied by anti-Balaka militia in December 2013. They used it as a barracks, says school director Edouard Père. He says they destroyed all the material. They broke the students' desks. Students have to sit on the ground. They destroyed the library. They took all the books. They left the school in a very bad state. Pear said the militia was also recruiting children into their ranks and giving them weapons. The militia left the school in late 2015. After rehabilitation funded by the government and UNICEF, the school reopened in February 2016 with about 2,500 students now back in class. But it is a different story outside the capital, says Eugène Lucien Mbondo, a senior official at the Ministry of Education. She says there are schools that do not work at the moment, but the government is working to liberate the schools. The Ministry of Education negotiates with armed groups, sometimes using UN peacekeepers as mediators to try to get the rebels to leave the schools. Mudge says the number of occupied schools has decreased, thanks in part to an initiative started last year by the UN mission, MINUSCA. Zach Badorf for VOA News, Bangui.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song No More War by Russ Corby.
Well, just checking off the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, just stop the war. No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today, they're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide, not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world? That love. So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way. They need someone to turn to.
Only Jah has the solution. No mankind has it on his own. We were created in the image and the likeness of God. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun down. And even times, the rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration...
We have been listening to Rice Corby with the song, No More War. I'm John Tanza in Washington. It's good to have you here. Thanks for listening. And join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
No more war in America. The people got to live up to Jah. No more war in Asia.